Welcome to What is Going Om for new thought from the edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. With fake news and conspiracy theories distracting and confusing people to the point where few know who or what to believe, we're going to focus tonight on some higher authorities whose only agenda is to remind us of who we are, why we're here, and why it's time to walk like the masters that we are. Joining me in a conversation that will cover ascension, energy, consciousness, spiritual physics, the Merlin effect, Macchio, otherwise known as BS, or just plain old bullshit, and the truth behind what's happening on planet Earth right now are channels, authors, founders of the Crimson Circle Energy Company, and messengers for the angelic beings and ascended masters Tobias, Kuthumi, and Adamus, Saint Germain, Jeffrey Hoppy, and Linda Hoppy. Jeff, Linda, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Sandy. It's a delight and honor to be here with you. We're sitting here at our home in Colorado. It's a beautiful summer afternoon, and really enjoy being on the phone with you.
Thank you, Sandy.
Oh, you've got summer. We've got winter.
Well, it's on the very edge. It'll be changing here probably next week, although we have had one snowstorm. We had almost about a foot of snow, but then Colorado, the sun comes back out, and it's beautiful.
Oh, I envy you. So, if I may give a little bit of backstory, you two met in high school, married in 1977, on the day the first Star Wars movie premiered, which must hold some significance for one or both of you for it to be listed in your bios, but we'll get to that later. Linda, a gifted artist, taught art education, and then you moved into fashion merchandising with a Fortune 500 company, before going on to serve as manager for Jeff's marketing consultancy company. Jeff goes into advertising, becomes a businessman, inventor, and entrepreneur, co-founder of an aviation telecommunications company that became one of the world's biggest providers of internet services on business and commercial aircraft. And in a deliciously ironic move, gets granted several patents for, wait for it, quote, multidimensional communications, a field that Jeffrey thinks he knows a lot about until 20 years later, when, in the middle of an airplane flight, an angel named Tobias unexpectedly shows up and starts teaching Jeff what multidimensional communication really means. I think that about sums it up for beginning, right?
Yes, definitely.
Very well.
Yeah.
So,
it always sounds strange to hear your own history.
Yeah, especially kind of truncated like that. So why don't you tell us, whichever one of you wants to jump in, what happened next?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one, Sandy. I'm going to jump in, but Linda, jump in to my jump in at any point. But, so we were going along in the business world and working really, really hard. It was a startup aviation company, and Linda was running our marketing consulting company. And then suddenly this entity, Tobias, showed up and started talking to me. And the short version is that at first I thought I was going crazy because maybe working too hard. But he started coming around on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, every night on my drive home from work, which was almost an hour long, and I loved it. I mean, it was fascinating what he was teaching me. I kind of call it my spiritual boot camp. He was teaching me essentially how to feel and how to open myself up. And I didn't tell anybody about it, not even Linda, for about a year. But I was loving it. There was times I'd question it. But I knew it wasn't me because I was learning things that I know I didn't know. So it was wonderful. And at some point, I went and told Linda about it. And, Linda, you can pick it up from there.
Well, you know, we've been working like crazy, working our brains out, going 90 miles an hour, just, you know, things were growing and happening so fast and trying to keep up. And then I realized we had gotten kind of going in two directions, and I loved him, but we hardly had any time together. We were both just working so hard. And then one night, Jeff comes, you know, he comes home and he says, Linda, there's something I need to talk to you about. I'm like, okay. And something felt really weird, but I didn't know what it was. And so I'm like, okay. So then he says, well, I need to tell you about this friend. And I'm like, oh, my God, we drifted too far apart. Oh, no. And then all of a sudden he starts to tell me about this person, this friend, Tobias, this old dead Jew. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right, let me see. Let's talk about that. So it was kind of funny because it come from such a different direction, it was very easy to want to be open to it. So
probably a relief almost.
It was a relief.
It's an old dead Jew, you know.
So I was ever indebted to him for the friendship.
Best way to deliver the news, isn't it?
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about the way she would take it. I just knew I needed to talk to her. And basically after that, she said, well, I'd like to talk to Tobias. I didn't know how to do that. I mean, but I never had. It was always Tobias and me. And so one night we sat down and I said, well, just, you know, ask questions, I guess. I don't know how this is going to turn out. But she loved it. I hated it. I thought it was really choppy and awkward. And I didn't like having to vocalize, you know, all this had been taking place within me. And actually, Tobias taught me how to communicate with him without words. So suddenly I was having to use words and speak out loud. But Linda loved it, you know.
Oh, man, it was so cool, super cool. It was weird. And Jeff even said, you can ask me some hard questions. I thought, oh, you don't ask your wife to do that. And I asked a few hard questions, and I was really impressed. I could immediately sense the authenticity and the beauty of it. And Tobias and I became very good friends.
And you were doing this in small groups that gradually developed, you know, into this incredible Crimson Circle that has, you know, tens of thousands of people around the world that, you know, are practitioners and helping others wake up. I mean, that's amazing. Why did you call it the Crimson Circle?
That was actually a name that Tobias gave us. And again, we started out just Linda and I, and then we had some friends up here who were kind of into the New Age thing, and we kind of told them about it. And so we'd get together once a month for just a little dinner, and they'd say, ask if I would channel. So that's actually what kind of grew it. The word got out, and before we knew it, it literally went viral. I mean,
yeah,
it went worldwide.
It was all over the mouth.
We spent almost 20 years catching up or trying to catch up with it. I don't know if we have yet. But it just grew so fast and unexpectedly, and along the way, wasn't shortly after that I got fired from my aviation company. I was one of the founders, and it was fun up to a point, but we were in the fundraising stage and getting our products out on the market. And one day my boss walked in and said, I'd like you to work from home from now on. And I said, well, what does that mean? And this was before the coronavirus. And he basically said, well, we're letting you go. Which was the best thing that could have happened to me. And actually, it really didn't even hurt, you know, I mean, ego or anything. I had a good severance package, so I didn't have to worry about it. And literally, after that, a couple of weeks later, the phone started ringing. People were saying, hey, would you come and do workshops? And we're like, never have, but well, actually, it's kind of funny.
It was an uncanny coincidence. I mean, it was just too unreal.
Yeah, the first workshop we ever did was in August 2001. The second one was, oddly enough, was in North Stoke, England, and it was over what's now 9/11, 2001. So we had a little group, you know, there was about 18 of us that came over from the States and then a group from England. And I don't know if you know where North Stoke is, Sandy?
Stoke or Stroke?
Stoke.
Stoke. Stoke, yes, I do know where Stoke
yeah.
is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, of all places. I mean, I don't know how we ended up there, but then we found ourselves literally traveling around the world. And to answer your question, Tobias is the one that said there's an angelic group called the Crimson Council, and it's basically what you call kind of a teaching order, angelic beings that teach all throughout creation. And he said, you know, your group on Earth is going to be known as the Crimson Circle, so you'll essentially be teachers on the planet Earth, and that's how the name came about, which was really funny because my favorite color is blue. I'm not, you go through my closet, you don't want to find one piece of clothing that's red or even crimson. Yeah. So it was, Linda found it amusing because she really loves red.
I loved red, and I giggled because everybody's like, it can't be red. That's not a spiritual color. And it's like, what? That's the color of passion and love. What do you mean it can't be a spiritual color?
So for the first 10 years of your channeling career, you worked with Tobias, this sweet, lovely, loving being, a best friend who told you at one point that you two had had a life together. He was your father. And then 9 years, however many years later, he leaves you to embody again. And you start working with someone who is just the polar opposite, violet flame. And, I mean, how big a shock was that?
Oh, boy. That was really interesting. I was so, Tobias was so warm and just big in his support and like this wonderful uncle. And then all of a sudden, Jeff starts channeling this person with kind of an attitude. And it was kind of interesting, because the funniest thing I ever saw, and so many of us were there, the first time he channeled Adamas to a crowd, he was sitting in a chair, and Adamas insisted that he stand up and insisted that he open his eyes. And it was like Jeff had this internal fight with him. One second, his eyes flashed open, and then they slammed shut. They flashed open, and then they slammed shut. And finally, he worked it out with Adamas, and Adamas got him to open his eyes and to act a little more comfortable. And then Tobias was very gentle, and just it was soothing. But Adamas wanted people to really pay attention, to be involved. So he was very, very, very engaging. There was no getting sleepy around him. It was all about, we got some stuff we're going to cover here.
Oh, and he'd walk around the room, yep. And very close interactions with people. And this was totally foreign to me because for 10 years I channeled sitting in a bar stool with my eyes closed. And I thought, the audience was all asleep. And, now Adamas has me eyes wide open, which is kind of funny because it was very hard to maneuver because when in channeled state, you're not really that connected with the 3D. And it took some practice. It took almost, I would say, 3 or 4 months to really learn how to walk while I was channeling. It's very woozy.
Well, he's the one I want to focus on tonight. Because
good.
Not only does he offer us some really solid information that makes perfect sense, something that's badly missing from our media these days, but also because he's just the kind of provocative, in-your-face badass with a wicked sense of humor that makes me laugh.
Yes, he is.
So,
yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, you talk about Adamas as a facet. He's an act, you say, a facet, an expression of Saint-Germain. And act, you use that word in one of your books, which I really enjoy, called the act of consciousness. Not the act of consciousness, just plain act of consciousness. Tell me what you mean by that.
Adamas, it is Saint-Germain, and I think most of the listeners are familiar with Saint-Germain. He's been around forever, and he's quite a being. When he came to work with us at Crimson Circle, he said, I want to differentiate myself for the work I do with Crimson Circle, because there was a lot of other people channeling Saint-Germain or have channeled them, and Guy Ballard back in the, 30s or 40s was probably the most noted. So he said, I'm going to come with this persona, this act called Adamas Saint-Germain, or if I was saying it in Europe, Adamas Saint-Germain. He laughs when we say it the American style, Adamas Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
He rolls his eyes. But it's a way of differentiating what he'd done before. And he says it's a facet. Basically, what he does is collects all of our energies. And then through me as the channeler, he is really translating back to everybody, reflecting back to everybody what's them. And one of his main points is that we are beings of consciousness, and consciousness really contains no energy. Consciousness is just pure awareness. And then it goes into its act through its energy, but it goes into the act, and you can be any act that you want. We're acting right now as facets of our soul, or what he calls the I Am, and we take on a human expression, but it's really just an act, and we can act poor or unhealthy. We can act creative. We can act very abundant. And it's really up to us. It's just really an act of consciousness. So basically, you know, you're really not governed by your past, even your past lives or your ancestral karma or your DNA or any of those things. You can really step out of that and choose to have your consciousness act however you want. Part of the problem is a lot of people really aren't sure what they want, or they're conflicted in what they want, or they believe that they're in some sort of karmic path that dictates certain things, you know, and then they rely on spirit guides and angels and everything to make their decisions for them. But it's really giving away your own essence, giving away the true creative nature of your being. Also, Saint Germain had quite a few lifetimes that were true big acts of consciousness. One was as Shakespeare, and the other was as Mark Twain. So he loves acting, and it really shows up during the channel. Sometimes he gets very theatrical, and I have to admit I don't know anything about Shakespeare, but once in a while he gets into a Shakespeare mode during a workshop, and it's hilarious to channel, you know, because he really gets into the acting part. But he says, you know, it's an act of consciousness. Stop thinking that you're locked into a certain identity. Act however you want to act, and then the energy will respond accordingly, and that's a huge part of it. You know, if you have certain beliefs and limitations and like a really kind of a restricted act of consciousness, that's exactly what the energy is going to give you. And if you realize, oh, this is my consciousness in the act of being a human, and it's my energy, and it's here to serve me, then you completely change the flow of energy and then really how you live your life.
Well, if he's had two and possibly even more incarnations as great writers, it must be really easy to write a book with him.
It is. It really is. You know, he gets going sometimes. I remember a couple of different things where we were working together, and he just kind of comes in and takes over, but he's very clear about what he wants. So, although
he's not timid.
He's not timid.
No,
you know.
Quite the opposite.
Yeah. But he does push, I have to admit. You know, we've got a list of, I don't know how many, hundreds of things he wants to get done, including another new book right now called The Time of Machines, you know, about our current age of technology and advanced intelligence, or artificial intelligence. But Linda and I have to tell him, Dama, slow down a second. You know, we can only do so much in a day.
Pretty much spend our whole lives trying to keep up with him.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure. Still, he must be fun to have around. I mean, you know, one of the things that I love about him is the no bullshit, no macchio.
Right,
as,
right.
You guys say, you know, and I'm all for that, all for that. And this particular book, I enjoyed so much. You know, I love books that are down to earth. They're practical. You cannot argue with the wisdom that they contain. Mm. And they take you right back to what you truly know inside. And
Yes. This
is what this book does. And that's why it made my bookworm a couple of months ago, because, you know, that's what I want to share with people. That's what we need to hear. And right now, we need to hear that we need to walk like the masters that we are. We need to hear, you know, who we are. And why we're here.
Absolutely. And the one thing, Sandy, we learned a long time ago, Adamus is very clear. He will call us on our BS, what he calls macchio, which is the kind of a spiritual distraction. He doesn't let people get away with stuff. And, you know, he said, I don't care if it's just five people that I'm here to work with. I don't care if the rest of Crimson Circle goes away. Which was a little shocking to Linda and I, because, you know, we do things to welcome people in, and here Adamus is inviting him to leave. He said, I don't care if it's just five people, but he said, I'm here for those who are choosing their embodied realization and who are going to stay here on the planet as true masters. He's not here to dabble around with metaphysical. He actually says he doesn't even call what we do spiritual. And he got us kicked out of Sedona a couple of years ago because he just doesn't care.
Yeah, indeed. So he talks about energy as crystallized, compressed consciousness created by us in order to have our experience. And he says that humans have very little understanding of consciousness, but consciousness creates creation, which provides many clues to why the world is where it's at today. Say more about that.
Yeah, it's actually one of the really fascinating things that I've learned so much from both Tobias and Adamus, but his take on it, and this is in the book Act of Consciousness, and it you don't have to be a physicist to read it because he keeps it in simple terms, but you have consciousness, which is just awareness. It doesn't contain any energy. It really has no agenda whatsoever. It's just, it is, loves being aware of itself, I guess is the way to say it. And it's what we call the I am, or what some people call the soul. It created energy, which is just the, you know, if you, in simple terms, it's like really condensed compassion of itself. And that energy doesn't currently exist within consciousness. They're very separate. So imagine consciousness, we write it as a symbol. It's the circumpunct. It's a circle with a dot in the middle. And then the energy is actually outside of that. So the things we do, what we experience as the facets of the I am in our human incarnations or even angelic lives will never corrupt the consciousness, the I am, could never corrupt it because in a way it's kind of separate. The I am sends itself out in a way into this energy to go play, to experience. Damas has said that what the soul really loves is to experience, and it does that through the human. It loves to express. It loves, you know, the creative expression because then it feels itself and it knows itself. It loves to expand, but not just expand outwards, it expands inwards and sideways in every direction. In a way, it's, you can imagine the I am as just this totally expansive being. And then finally, it loves its enlightenment. Enlightenment is basically when the, what we call the master, but it's really another facet of the I am, goes through all the human experiences for any lifetime you've ever had and this lifetime. Often those experiences are filled with emotions, traumas, hurts and wounds, but also joys and happiness. But all of this is distilled. So, you know, we have our human memories that contain actually not always true to what really happened, but we have the human memories. All of this is distilled, and that's brought or given back to the I am in a manner of speaking. And that's the enlightenment of the I am, the continued expansion and expression. So one of the things I love that Adamus talks about, he said, you know, you as a human, as a facet of the I am, you're here to experience. That's the human's job, to experience. And you do a really good job with it. And if it was up to the human would continue doing it lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, because that's what it does. You know, it's the job of the human. But at some point, the facet of the I am comes along and says, okay, that's enough. We're going to come to realization now. It's when every experience is brought to its wisdom, and there's no reason to have to keep incarnating back on the planet. And it's actually really not the human's responsibility for enlightenment. And I think that's one of the big fallacies that we believe we have to take on the job of becoming enlightened. And Adamus says, first of all, you can't, even if you tried. You don't understand it. It's not up to the human. It's only up to the human to be aware of the enlightenment or the realization of the I am. And it says, you know, it's all a natural process. It's going to happen anyway. You know, the harder you work at it, the further away it's going to be. But if you just stop, take a deep breath, and allow, then the realization, or what he prefers the word realization to enlightenment, but then the enlightenment comes. And we found out through our work and the work we do with people all over the world, first of all, it's a big change in perception, But once you relax into your own enlightenment, it really works. And then suddenly you realize, oh my gosh, all this is my energy. It's here to serve me. I don't have to struggle anymore. I don't have to battle with things anymore. And suddenly life becomes not only much easier, but really much more fascinating, creative, experiential, sensual. And that's really some of the greatest things I've learned.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and with me tonight are Jeff and Linda Hoppe, co-founders of the Crimson Circle Energy Company, authors and messengers for the angelic beings Tobias, Kuthumi, and Adama Saint Germain. And we're talking about their book, Act of Consciousness, Messages from an Ascended Master, in which Adamas reveals how your reality is created and how you can change it. We'll be back with more from Jeff and Linda Hoppe after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On. As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who have walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Jeffrey Hoppe, Linda Hoppe. I'm sure I am not the only person who was shocked to read in Act of Consciousness that in the many millions of years of history, only about 9,000 beings have ascended or realized their I Am presence. Why so few?
That's a really good question. And you'd think after all these millions of incarnations on the planet, it'd be a lot more. But I think one of the things is we get stuck here. You know, we get caught up in all sorts of stuff. And, you know, what brings us back from one lifetime to another is unfinished business, karma. Usually, it's family karma. usually end up back in the same biological family as the last one. And Alice actually says most of the time on the planet up until recently was that most of the time you end up even in the same, near the same city where you were in the last lifetime. He said it's amazing. Most souls don't even go 100 miles past where they were in the last lifetime. I think that's changing right now with technology. But we get stuck, and we don't know how to get out. And then we take weird ways to get out. And then we keep getting stuck more. But he says that the average is for lifetimes on the planet is about 1,200 right now. And it could be going even higher. But 1,200 lifetimes, that takes a little while to go through all those.
Mm, yeah, I'm sure it does. Now, he talks in Act of Consciousness about there being four primary human issues that really occupy our minds: abundance, health, relationships, and self-worth. Say a little bit about those.
It's really kind of funny because if you, engage in conversations with people and they want to start talking to you about their life, and if there's any kind of issues whatsoever, it's almost insane that they almost always fall in those four categories. Almost everything. Think about it. I mean, it's almost a game now. It's built my patience with listening to people just to see which category their story is going to fall under.
Some people have a hard time really kind of taking a look at themselves, and it seems so complex and confusing. But actually, if you take a look at it, it's relationships, health, abundance, self-worth. And I think the stickiest one of all those is relationships.
Right.
Sticky in terms of karma, bringing you back here. And it's where you start doing things, that you're not real proud of, that you eventually feel guilty or shameful about. Well, that's the nature of karma. And then you run into health issues, partly as a result of that. And, abundance issues was particularly in the early days of Crimson Circle was just rampant. Thomas just, he would howl at people about it, saying, this is the most, abundance issue is the most ridiculous thing. It's your energy. It's here to serve you. Now, why are you not abundant? And he's not saying, go out and be filthy rich, but you should be abundant in everything, your relationships, your health, your sense of well-being, as well as money.
It's your own responsibility. I mean, it's too easy to want to shove it off onto others when it's really your own issue.
It's all our own issue. It's all our responsibility, isn't it?
But that's huge. That's huge in itself.
Yeah.
When I talk to, it's like talking in two worlds sometimes. I love what we do, and we're around Chambra a lot, and then we live in a little bit of a remote place, and it's always it's amazing. I don't know what the right word is. When you then go down and have to do things with, mass groups of other people, and it's like a different earth.
It's kind of a juxtaposition.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition is today the only people other than Linda I've seen was five deer walking through the property. So yes, it is a juxtaposition. But those four issues, you can really take a look and, at your own life and say, where am I on those? And are they in balance? Why is the health, not there? And generally reverts back to issues of self-worth.
Right.
Issues of self-worth usually come from the karma of relationships, and the biggest one being your own family, your own biological relationships. Adamus actually says that, we talk about past lives and how they influence this life. He says that's nothing compared to your own family karma, the DNA. You're probably your great-grandmother on your family tree type of thing. And we just keep coming back into these incestuous spiritual relationships. So family life for a lot is great, but it's just so repetitive. And then things like alcoholism and mental illness and things like that flow right through that family karma, right into the DNA. And somebody at some point has got to stop it and say, no more. I love my family, but, am that I am.
Well, there's scientific proof, that supports all that, you drag it with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you drag it with you. Tell me about the Merlin effect. I didn't know that you had channeled Merlin. What is the Merlin effect?
Basically, the Merlin is that, you could say, that act of consciousness within ourselves that really knows that time doesn't exist. It transcends time. You can literally go into the future, which actually is here right now, as is the past, but you can go into the future and really connect with yourself that is fully realized, and let's say choosing to stay on the planet in a physical body. And instead of waiting to get there, you know, in the future, you can allow that to come in now, and you can realize that you're realized. In other words, you don't have to really wait for the future. Merlin is a time traveler that can go back and forth in time. It's not impeded by time itself. And it's one of the big themes that Adamus is talking about right now is the effects of time on humans, how it really provides the structure of our 3D life, but you can transcend that. And more than that, the Merlin is multidimensional, meaning you can exist and coexist in this physical reality, and at the same time, you can go outside of it. You can be in both. He calls that the and, A-N-D, which is kind of funny because it's the reverse of DNA. So it's very interesting, but literally you don't have to wait for, you know, for your enlightenment. It's already there, and it's just a matter of allowing it and realizing it. You know, if you're lacking in abundance, for instance, you can literally be with that Merlin part of yourself, go to that future or that potential where you are abundant and start living it now. You don't have to wait for 20 years or 20 lifetimes for it. It's truly fascinating because it transcends time. Time is perhaps the biggest inhibitor of what we do. It's the thing that really keeps us from our true freedom. Time is wonderful, but we've come to believe in it so much that we don't realize there's also the no time, or what Adamus loves to call free time. And I love that term because it's like, yeah, my free time, but it's also being free of time itself. And it's... Yeah. It's so simple, Sandy, and it's so profound, and it really works, and it's amazing. I keep thinking, oh my gosh, these are secrets, you know, that are so mysterious and covered up, and then it's like, no, they're right here in front of us.
Some days easier than others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes easier than others.
Yes. Yeah, I spoke earlier about... quoted actually that humans have very little understanding of consciousness. Consciousness creates creation, which provides many clues to why the world is where it's at today. So here we stand, you know, probably for the first time in our global history, where every single individual seems to be having an existential crisis. So what does Adamus have to say about what's happening on planet Earth right now?
Yeah, he does this beautiful, he doesn't often talk about the rest of humanity. He's really focused on working with us on a realization. But once a year, he does this thing called Pronost, and he talks about the planet in the future. A couple of years ago, the theme was that the dragon enters. Mm-hmm. And basically, the dragon is the part of us that goes in and finds all the hidden junk. So we can release it. And he said, literally, the dragon came into the planet a couple of years ago, and it because the planet's on the verge of huge changes, the dragon comes in to stir the pot up, literally, so we can uncover things that have been buried for a long time. It also happens on a very personal basis when you're coming into your realization. The dragon comes in, and at first, oh, it feels like a dragon. It tears you apart, but ultimately becomes your best friend because it helps you get rid of the stuff that you're holding on to. This year, the theme for his Pronost 2020 was the planetary awakening. And he says, literally, the planet is going through awakening like we did, whether it was, 10 years ago, 30, 40 years ago, whatever. And awakening, in a sense, is wonderful, but it is very challenging, very, very challenging. And it sometimes it just tears you apart. On one hand, you realize there's a lot more to life, but on the other hand, it's having to get off the old path. And he said that's what's happening right now on the planet and tied into the awakening. And he doesn't really mean it in a spiritual sense, but in a consciousness sense. We have the whole thing with artificial intelligence, which he says is making the greatest changes on the planet right now. And don't think it's just technology. It is a huge change that eventually creates a whole new species of humans. You know, we have all this technology to augment our biology, and I forgot exactly what he calls it, but we become robo-sapiens. So all this is going on right now. Then you throw the coronavirus in there. Then, in the U.S. here, we've got these crazy elections. I've never seen it so crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Couldn't be weirder.
Couldn't be weirder. I mean, it could not be weirder. But we're just going through a massive planetary change. But one of Adamus's big points is that's why we need embodied masters on the planet, particularly with all this advance in artificial intelligence, which it's not going to be too many years now where the AI is equal to or greater than the human mind. It's been predicted as early as 2025, and some are saying 2030, but that's a huge turning point for the planet. And without consciousness, without truly embodied masters on the planet, it gets very unbalanced. But he's rounding up a group right now that is going to have their realization. He says there's over 1,000 right now within our group, not even to mention other groups. And with that, we bring in the element of consciousness that's going to balance all this artificial technology.
Well, I was very excited looking at your site today to see that you'd been doing a lot of work on transhumanism. And this is something that has cropped up now 3 times in just this last week. You know, an astrologer that a particularly good astrologer that I follow was talking about transhumanism, and he's, you know, been talking about it actually for quite a few years now, and the effect of technology and digitization and miniaturization of technology and how it is affecting us, our brains and reality, or our perspective of reality. And then just yesterday, I got a newsletter from Dr. Mercola, who's one of the natural doctors that I tend to follow as being somebody who gives you the truth. And he had a whole article there about transhumanism. And we are definitely headed that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how everything could be used for good or bad. You know, I think it's really up to us as to, you know, how that is going to affect us.
Yes, and technology is a wonderful thing. Linda and I both love tech, yeah. You know, I mean, the gadgets and the toys and things. We did a series. We have a monthly webcast, and we do it in annual series. I think the series 3 years ago was called Transhumanism, where Adamus talked a lot about that. Right. There's another important aspect of that, and that's singularity. This is definitely not a spiritual term. It comes from the technical people, but it's when things are no longer like on a hockey stick kind of curve of change. It goes off the charts. You couldn't even predict it. And, you know, one of the things I think that when the Mayans way back when looked, you know, into the future, and they couldn't really see past a certain point because it totally goes off the charts, and it's been said that that is going to happen at around the year 2050, which Adamus concurs with. But it's also interesting to note that a couple of years ago, you know, Steve and Barbara Rother, of course, and Steve had done a channel and said something that he was given that the Earth wouldn't be here after 2050, and I think what was happening was the entities were looking at it saying,
not the way we know it.
You can't even see it because right? It's so different. And really, it's not scary. I mean, well, at first it is. But then you start thinking.
Really, that's not scary to you?
No. You start thinking about the advances of technology and what it could do for the planet, for humanity. It actually democratizes the planet. It puts the same tools and the same opportunities in the hands of everybody because technology keeps getting cheaper. So you can be in really a poor country in Africa or somewhere in Asia, and they can have really access to about the same computing technologies that we have. So it changes the planet. It's actually fascinating.
But it depends on what you do with that consciousness.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, let's look at, you know, where they've got countries where they're chipping all their citizens. You know, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Maybe both.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it has some good points. but it also has, yeah,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you could track everybody. Yeah. But I think, again, that's comes back to this book that Adamus keeps wanting us to write, The Time of Machines. He says that in his last lifetime, in about 1790, he projected himself into the future, into now, into 2020, and he said, he arrived and he was surprised because everybody was looking at these things in their hands. He called looking glasses, which obviously are our mobile phones, and he called it the time of machines, the time of technology and robots and everything else. And, you know, it's happening. There's no question about that. And I don't feel it's scary. It could be, but I think there's going to be enough humans who stay around on the planet
with consciousness
and with realization,
okay,
which is a huge key to it also. And that's going to balance, you know, the people abusing power. I think we live in absolutely fascinating times.
Truly.
We do. And I'm sure that it's more fascinating to those that are watching it than those that are in it.
Yes.
But, you know, so, okay, so what's the advice? What do you know, you talk about, you know, those with consciousness and realization. How do we get there in a short period of time?
I think a couple main things, Sandy, is number one, don't put that responsibility on your human self. The human is to experience what it's like to go into realization, but the human doesn't have to do it. It's a very natural process. And I think we mess up when we think we have to do it and we manipulate it and we fall far short of it really occurring. As a human, I've learned to kind of stand out of the way and just enjoy my everyday experiences while allowing the realization to occur. It's kind of like the melding of the I am and the human, or bringing divinity into my humanity. And the less I struggle with it, the easier it gets. And I think that's so important. You just take a deep breath and trust yourself. And it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but...
No, but it's true.
It works. You know, and I see people studying the mystics and the spiritual materials and, you know, trying to get it all right and page after page of notes of what they should or shouldn't be doing and eating and not eating. And Thomas says, throw that all out. You know, it doesn't matter. It's for the human to allow and to experience. And to me, that's so profound. And one other point to that is realize that it's all your energy. And it's a really weird one at first, because Adamus came one day and said, you know, everything you see, everything you perceive, it's your energy.
Adamus physics.
Yeah, it's Adamus physics. And I'm like, what? Those trees aren't my energy. That mountain isn't. And he goes, yeah, it actually is. It's your perceiving your own energy, and it appears to be a mountain, even though it really isn't. But he said, that's all your energy. And once you get out of this old mindset that it's outside of you, realize that it's inside, and realize that it's your energy and it wants to serve you. That's the definition of a master. And then it becomes easy. It flows. The river flows, you know, rather than you swimming upstream against the river. And it's those really are the two most profound things. And you don't have to do all the studying and stressing and rituals and everything else. And you realize, man, that was a bunch of macchio. It was the human trying to do their own realization. And then all you get is human realization.
And he's kind of implied that you trap yourself, that you don't even trust yourself enough to allow it to happen inadvertently. And that, you know, the kind of people that do the, quote, bad things, that, you know, things that we think are bad, they're not on that journey anyways. And that we need to allow ourselves to think of, really see ourselves outside of that. We're not even like that.
Well, you said it in the book, you know, where you write about the primary differences between our human self and our divine self, that, you know, there's experience versus action. The divine loves experience. The human loves to take action. I mean, we feel that we've got to do something. Being is so foreign to us that we've got to be on the move. And that's a really hard habit to break.
It's also kind of egotistical, you know, for the human to think, well, I got to do the whole thing. I got to be God. I got to do my realization. I've got to be enlightened. And Adamus laughs and says, you don't get it. You can't. The job of the human as a facet of the I am is just to experience it. And then to marvel and revel in the sensuality and the beauty of it. I mean, To me, that's kind of a lost opportunity. We're not really taking advantage of. We're so busy trying to do it that we become kind of gray and colorless. We forget to be sensual with it.
Yeah, for sure. And it is still really, really, you know, it's books like this that give me the opportunity to remind myself. And we need more books like this. So hurry up and write that other one, please.
Yes, thank you. You and Damas, thank you.
Well, we're almost out of time now. I just, before we close the show, just tell us what you've got coming up shortly.
Well, I don't know. I've got to stop and think about that. We just had a really long run this summer with all sorts of different. This last weekend, we just finished a 3-day class, an online class in death. It was really great. I mean, death is not a scary subject, and Adamus talks about what it is and also trains people to be death guides, you know, like support a friend or relative crosses over to be there, and it's really fascinating. We had a huge online thing a couple weeks ago. We were supposed to be in Bled, Slovenia, with about 500 people. Of course, we had to cancel, so we did it online with 1,500 people. We had a great time. Merlin came in, and Cthumi came in, and St. Germain. Once in a while, I channel St. Germain, you know, instead of Adamus, and there is a marked difference between the two.
Right. Yes, there is.
St. Germain is
kind of
boring.
Since I missed a good event.
Oh, it was great. So I guess our next thing is we do a class. It's coming up in late October online called the Sexual Energy School. And basically, it's all about teaching people about their energy and not letting others feed off of their energy. It's something I think we've all done, or some still do, is other people will feed off you. And it's really good course, Sexual Energy School.
Well, we'll check that one out. Jeff, Linda, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delight to have this opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Always a pleasure. We love working with you.
Thank you.
For more information about Adamus St. Germain and Jeff and Linda Hoppe's work with the Crimson Circle, visit thecrimsoncircle.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. And in the meantime, I'll be back with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.